Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 434. And tonight, we're recapping Welcome to Night Vale number 258, Swap Meet, which I knew this was going to be another one that Bree Williams would excel at because she is so good at lists of random things.
Yes, and it is Night Vale's first swap meet, and it is taking place at the fairgrounds, which is kind of interesting because apparently they've never had a fair at Night Vale, but I think... apparently things are more important for their potentiality than their actual intention. I don't know. He went on for a little while about that, and I think it was the sanitation department getting snippy about definitions of things.
Yeah, and speaking of the sanitation department had those guidelines for disposal a while ago for the landfill, and of course, no physical items can go in the landfill. The swap meet, however, you can bring anything, physical and intangible items, and they're going to give us a whole bunch of guides on how to make a good swap, but first, we're going to go to movie reviews.
And Cecil actually went with his young son, Esteban, and they went to see When a Stranger Calls, which was, it was a documentary about a conflict between the two famous scientists, Alexander Graham Bell and Edison, I think?
I think so, yeah.
Which resulted in the invention of the telephone, which meant that when they got home, they had to have the conversation with Esteban about what a telephone is. And it's a difficult conversation, but eventually it has to be done.
Yeah, that's just part of being a parent. So we go straight from there to Traffic, and we're hearing about Michaela Sandborn, I believe is her name, just that she loved cars and she worked on cars and everything was amazing until she got this job offer and she accepted the job where she's working in a cavern on the machine, and that's all she knows.
Yep, and she bonded with a fellow mechanic named Ray, who also had questions about the project, and eventually all of the mechanics banded together and they sabotaged the project, and the survivors went back to their lives and they never talked about this again. And Michaela never stopped driving her beloved purple Hummer, even when she was too old to be driving, and I believe she's buried in it now. So to the family and friends of Michaela Sandborn, and this has been Traffic. No, wait, sorry. This has been Obituaries.
They have never done that one before.
No, they haven't.
Yeah. Okay, so as for the swap meet and the guidelines for the swap meet, the most important thing you need to know is there is no money at the swap meet, not even for like buying a hot dog over at the food stands. And also if you happen to bring in any like money, like spare change in your pocket or possibly like a souvenir coin from a vacation or whatever, you're going to go to detention and you do not want to go to the sanitation department's detention.
So we should go on to the frequently asked questions section. And the first one is, what makes a good swap? And it has to be equal. And there was a whole lot of corollaries about what makes something equal. And you really should listen to this episode because it just goes on.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, a list of very weird things. Things that you can swap like for like is bodies, souls, stories, I guess, like horrible stories about a terrible birthday you have, as long as somebody else has a horrible story about a birthday they had. So more on that. The second thing was what makes a bad swap, and I didn't actually write all of it down. It went on for a while, but there were things like second-guessing things and training stuff where there's not a balance, I suppose, or not keeping consequences in mind.
Yeah, and then they went on to the idea of Faustian deals and all sorts of things like doing a swap where you get musical talent in exchange for your soul, or all of these other really horrifying sounding deals that will be damaging to everybody in your very existence. Those are fine.
Yep, yep. You can go and take that up with the demons who have the booth right next to the fuzzy blankets.
Okay, so now we do Traffic.
Right.
And Traffic this time is Steve Carlsberg is giving a driving lesson to his stepdaughter Janice, but it's not going well because he's got a not great car and it doesn't have a lot of the alterations that you need to make for somebody who's got spinal bifida. So it's just very frustrating for everybody. And Steve knows he needs a better car, but he doesn't make enough money at his bank job. And in fact, he's been getting a pay cut every single year in exchange for him being the best employee. And in this case, best means not likely to complain. And I'm just like, oh my God, I have heard that so much about so many jobs that if you are buckle down and you're doing a really good job and you don't ever complain, a lot of companies will take advantage.
Yeah, they sure will. So that's the end of traffic. From there, we go on to the specific guidelines from the sanitation department. And by specific, I mean like you personally. What are you looking to get rid of? What are you looking to swap? And this can be lives, jobs, husbands, wives, whatever. You could even exchange crushing self-doubt for a life of confidence, which, believe it or not, apparently that's the kind of trade that happens all the time, because people who are supremely self-confident maybe just want to be stopped.
Yeah, and you have to get rid of something you don't need, but it has to be something that someone else can use. Like, you cannot trade away the general feeling that the country is going in the wrong direction, because everybody has that.
Oh, boy. Oh, God. Too soon. So the sanitation department wants you to start looking through your home, your closets, your garage, your brain, your soul, find things that you need to get rid of. And while you're thinking about that, we'll just go to the weather.
Which was really good this time. Yeah. I liked the lyrics. I liked how ominous the music in the background and the chord changes were. It's another one that I'll have to add to my regular playlist.
Yeah. I thought of it as sort of like modern electrical pop, I suppose, but super fun. It was Break the Wheel by Alice Knows Karate, which is a very cool name.
That's a really awesome name.
Okay, so we come back from the weather, and Cecil's just talking about how much he's looking forward to going to the swap meet, because he hasn't been to one since he was a teenager. He doesn't remember a lot of it, you know, remembers like a lot of dust, a lot of crumbling monuments. It's all just a little vague.
And he did do a great swap at one point, and in exchange for some awesome ideas, including a comb that was really cool, all he had to trade away was the memory of everything that came before. So he would only be able to make new memories. And I believe we've finally been given an explanation for why he can never remember the story about his father whenever he's asked his sister Janice to tell it to him.
Yep. Interesting with the comb. He just wanted to look cool at his new school. And for a while, it totally worked. Everybody liked him. They hired him for president, even though they had just met him. He got all A's in classes, even though he never did his homework. And it's all great up until he lost the comb. And then he got demoted from being president and falling behind in classes. Of course, you know, that's just a coincidence that it happened right when he lost the comb.
And yeah, nothing to do with the comb, obviously.
No.
And that was pretty much it, I think. He's just really looking forward to the swap meet. I think it would be awesome if they continued this in the next episode to find out what is he going to swap this time and how much trouble is he going to get into because of it.
Yeah, you never know with Night Vale. They could actually like pick this up and this could be like the start of a new story arc, or we could never hear about the swap meet again until like 10 years from now when they do an episode about going back to the swap meet and we're like, oh, wow, they did that like 10 years ago. Be darned.
Because I remember when they had the auction ages ago and Cecil was one of the things that was up for auction. So that certainly came into play later.
Oh, boy, howdy. Okay, so that's it for Night Vale. What we've got to talk about next, obviously, is we both watched the second episode of the second season of Arcane.
And that was all kinds of whoa, I think, when I saw that. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So I would been looking forward to seeing Savika again, and we got to see Savika. And it was her trying to put her arm back together and throwing just this rage at Silco for the fact that he's dead, and Jinx is there. And the two of them, I don't know, they're just not fighting. But I want to know, does Savika know that Jinx was the one that killed Silco? Because there was another underling that shows up in another part of the episode who didn't know that Jinx was the one that killed him.
Yeah, I would bet probably not. Though as angry as Savika is at Silco for everything that's gone wrong, I don't know. She might end up being okay with it. One of the things that's going wrong right now is something that I had never considered. With Silco dead, there's a huge power vacuum in the underworld right now. And everybody is being very cutthroat and ruthless, and nobody can trust anybody else. And it's making an already difficult existence in the underworld a lot harder.
Yeah, it actually reminded me of the beginning of the second season of Mayor of Kingstown. Mm-hmm. You have all of the really powerful people jockeying for control, and then you have all the underlings that are trying to scrape whatever they can get, and it's just violence everywhere. And Jinx is walking through all of this. I mean, you had a little bit of a flashback where she brought Silco's body into the water and just kind of said goodbye to him. And she's obviously bereft and she doesn't know what to do. And she'd like accidentally saves this adorable moppet of an orphan that was getting preyed on by a gang at one point. And I think he's kind of following her around because she's terrifying, but it's got to be less terrifying than being alone at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Lashing onto the most powerful person you possibly can is usually what people do.
Yeah.
Now, meanwhile, Victor wakes up and comes out of that strange organic cocoon thing that he was in. And I love the fact, because Jace was there and Jace had been asleep, but he wakes up when Victor's there and Victor looks at him and just says, "What am I?" And Jace just goes, "You're alive." And he's so happy. It was really nice to see him. He didn't stay happy for very long, but he was awfully happy to see that Victor was alive.
Yeah. And Victor is one of the characters where I first noticed what the show does with expressions, where, you know, it's the whole Zero Shortcuts thing, but also adding in elements that you probably wouldn't even notice in a live action thing. But like when Jace and Victor first met and Victor was looking through Jace's notes and Jace was like, "Have you come here to gloat?" And Victor kind of looks up and shakes his head, "No," like that. And just the expression that he did and little movements and whatever, it was so cool. And of course, it means you have to pay attention to everything in this show. This is not one of those shows where we can do craft work while we're watching it.
Nope.
There's so much going on.
Oh, and then there'll be these little tableaus every once in a while. You know, Jace and Victor end up having an argument about what the future holds. And at one point, Jace is yelling at Victor because now Jace is being looked at as like a person of authority and everything. And he yells at Victor and says, "You think it's so easy?" And Victor is standing there holding on to his kind of like staff cane thing. And his he's got like a hood partially covering his head and everything. And it looks like something out of a Renaissance painting. It's just one tiny little moment, but I had to freeze the screen and to get a screen cap of it because it's just really beautiful.
And this whole time, Victor is, whatever it was that he did to his leg in season one, where it kind of looked like mechanical, but also organic, like a insect carapace, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, that's his whole body. That is pretty much everything except his face at this point. And he tells Jace our paths diverged a long time ago, and part of it is because Jace didn't destroy the hex thing that Victor had created. And Victor tells him about that poor assistant that had obviously had a crush on Victor, and she tried to save Victor at one point in season one and just got obliterated by the magic, whatever it is. So I guess he's now part of that thing, whatever it is.
I think so. Yeah, that seems to be. And he ends up leaving and going on his way. He doesn't want anything to do with Jace anymore.
So Jinx, after meeting with Savika, she goes to that little game room or whatever where they all used to hang out. And she's obviously working on a project, but there's some cloud of something coming in. And this was my question. It's, you know, the enforcers, everybody that's looking for Jinx at this point. Is that something that they're creating to try to clear the area as they're exploring? Or is this something that's just kind of happening? Because at one point it looked like something that was alive.
I immediately assumed it was something the enforcers sent in, because the enforcers are all wearing masks. And it didn't seem like an atmospheric thing that they were taking advantage of. It looked to me like it was deliberate, and that's how you flush people out. Because it almost worked, because I guess Jinx doesn't have a mask, I suppose, which seems
apparently
odd.
Not. Everything's kind of crazy. But the thing that breaks Jinx is that she spots Vi in with the enforcers. They are working together to hunt Jinx down, and that is just the worst news possible.
Yeah.
Well, Jinx flees, and she's just like on the ground. She's carrying this huge package that she had wrapped up, whatever it was she was working on. And she collapses, and she's screaming in rage. And then a bunch of the other powers that be that are jockeying for control, they find her and they punch her and they knock her down. And it looks like they're trying to get the bounty on her. So they need her alive, But, you know, the one Weasley little guy, he has no problem with stabbing her eyes out if he needs to. And they are about to try to subdue her, and somebody gets shot, and you look, and it's Savika, and she's actually chasing them off, and it's badass.
Is that the point when she opens the package and sees what Jinx has been carrying around?
Yeah, because she, Jinx, like, you know, also starts fighting back, and she throws the package at Savika, and Savika opens it up, and it's a new arm. But oh my god, this is the craziest shit they've done so far. This next scene was bizarre.
It was the best. The only thing I've written down is like, oh my god, Jinx and Savika and the fight with the arm, so cool. I mean, it's all the effects, and it does these like things where she's built in this thing that looks like a little game thing, like a what is it? I'm thinking of a lottery.
A one-armed bandit.
Yeah, exactly, with the little spinning wheels and everything. And it will land on symbols, and depending on what it lands on, the arm can do different types of like eldritch blasts and everything. It is just, and it's so intense. It can't possibly last for more than like 3 minutes, right?
I don't know. It's just, it's so crazy. And the way they animate it is just bizarre and neon everywhere. And then I think there were at least two instances where the arm does something, and then Savika just gives this look to Jinx. Really?
And Jinx is, of course, delighted. She loves it.
Absolutely delighted. And I think even the little orphan Moppet that she saved earlier on, he's there. And he and Jinx are just standing back. And sometimes you don't even see the fight. You just see them reacting to whatever the hell is going on at the moment.
It is. You're right. It is the craziest fight we've seen on this show before. But it was just badass and amazing and beautiful.
Yes. Yes. All of this has been so beautiful. So seems to be that Savika and Jinx will be working together, and Savika wants to know what she's going to be doing now, and Jinx says, taking care of what's left of my family.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh my goodness. So the other thing that happened at the end of this episode is Victor goes down to the Undercity, and he's walking around, and you see a bunch of like the worst off people from the Shimmer, including that one person that used to be a friend to Vi.
Yeah.
And they see that he's got a fancy cane, so they're just going to go mug him. And that poor little guy, he like confronts Victor with a knife, and he's going to like, you know, tell him to just hand it over, but he's terrified. He can't do anything. He can't even think about stabbing somebody. He's that terrified.
And Victor looks at him at one point, and I want to say he reaches out and he just touches him, but there's this kind of like energy that comes off. And when he removes his hand, you see the addicts, you know, the Weasley addict who was like friends with Vi and everything, you see his face, and his face is back to normal. He looks human again.
Yeah, there's little tendrils of something that kind of looks similar to what Victor's body has been turned into, but they're white and gold. I mean, it looks almost angelic. And he's just laughing in relief, and he and all of the other Shimmer sufferers just drop to their knees, and it's this beautiful panorama of all of them surrounding Victor, who is just godlike at this point.
Yes, and the music was so good.
And the last thing you see, though, is, you know, the one guy that he's cured, someone is standing next to him and puts a hand on his shoulder, and you look up, and it's that assistant that was killed. And you had heard her voice earlier on in the scene calling to Victor. So he was hearing her, he was following her cues, and then he sees her, and she's fine, she's beautiful, she's smiling at him, and then you pull back, and there's nobody standing behind that guy. So this is only something Victor is seeing.
Oh, but it was just so, it really just like punched you in the heart at that moment. It was just, it was a great ending to the episode.
It was
really good.
Yeah, all of this was great. I mean, it's such an interesting story, because you've got Vi and Jinx are on opposite sides of this conflict, but neither of them are really like fanatically devoted to what side they're on. They're just both trying to survive and make a terrible situation better. And it's just, so you really don't know how anyone's going to choose to behave going forward, because it's not good versus evil. It's what's the least worst solution we can come up with.
Right, exactly. Which is the only reason why Vi joined the Enforcers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like, yes, the Enforcers had killed her parents, but she's just seeing what's going on. And she's thinking, this is the only way I can stop it.
You know?
And it's my family member. And so I have a responsibility. So I got to tell you, I hear stories about animators getting burnt out from time to time and companies like making all this money and not treating their people very well. I hope to God the animators are being treated okay, because they are turning out some just amazing, amazing stuff.
It's the best thing out there right now. And it's the combination of so many things. The fantastic animation, the really good story, the excellent voice acting, the music. And it's just perfect.
Yeah. What is it with people hating on Imagine Dragons? Where did that come from?
I don't know. It reminds me a little bit of Nickelback.
I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
Once you reach a certain level of pop success, you kind of have to have haters, I guess. It's just one of those things, because they're everywhere. But I don't know that Imagine Dragons quite reached the Nickelback levels of we can't stand this band. And yet somehow they're still making all the money.
Oh, yeah. Seriously. No, it's like that. And I want to say Hootie and the Blowfish. I think there was like a Simpsons episode where the shadowy government agency was going to get Bart to actually be a spy and wear a wire. And he's like, here's a tape. And Bart holds it up and reads it and goes, Hootie and the Blowfish? And he goes, it was cheaper than blank tape. And I was like, oh, that's awful. Oh my God. Wow. Well, that's mean. But yeah, every time I hear, and Imagine Dragons is just doing the intro again, but every time I hear the intro, which I really like, I just think, why do people hate Imagine Dragons?
I don't understand. I don't know. It's always, there's got to be like one every 5 or 6 years that's like one of the most hated bands out there. So I'm kind of curious to see what happens next. Because let me tell you, when I first was hearing Imagine Dragons, I loved it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, God. I'm not saying that I love every song they've done, but man, pretty much every song that's hit the top 40. This is kind of a couple weird ones. Was it one that where they get like an accordion in there or something at
something
one point?
Something like that, yeah.
Maybe not that one, but I like all the other ones. So that's it for Arcane, but you and Nathan went to the Ren Faire this weekend.
We did. It was Time Traveler Weekend, which basically means you don't even have to be a time traveler. It's anything goes.
Wow.
So, I mean, I got a picture of... what is it? Medieval era Thanos warrior standing next to two women who were dressed as Lady Loki and as Sylvie. And it was that's the sort of thing you see there. And of course, then it's all the other fun stuff with the medieval things. And they had a wedding that apparently you can pay for to be like paraded through the Renaissance festival with a whole bunch of people in Tudor gear, which was like spot on stuff, and a herald, like, you know, announcing you as you go through. It was all so cool.
Oh, I love stuff like that. Man, it's been a while. It's been over 2 years since I went to that Ren Faire outside of Burbank. I really need to get to another one at some point.
Oh, I miss the medieval fair that they had in Sarasota. And I asked Mom about that. And she said, yeah, they kind of fell out with the Ringling Grounds or the Ringling Museum, which is where it was held. And I was like, oh, really? Was there a big problem? And she said, they didn't like what they did to the grounds. I'm like, well, that's fair.
It is true. I mean, it's basically a giant fair, and there's so much foot traffic. I mean, even if nobody's throwing trash around all over the place, which I'm sure they are, but I mean, it's just stomping all over creation. But I mean, it's a park, and people are meant to be in a park, you know?
What I really miss about that, one of the biggest things I miss about that, the pork pies.
Scottish meat pies?
Did not have that at this. I have not seen that anywhere.
Nope.
And I just like, I want to have that again, because that was really good. So I'll probably have to go to the Highland Festival at some point, because if anyone's going to have Scottish meat pies, it's going to have to be a Highland Festival.
And we've tried making them before, though we haven't done what the hot water crusts, basically. We're just using, like, you know, pie crust that you can buy from the grocery store. And they're good, but it's just not the same.
It's not the same.
So good. It's been, I mean, what? I was going to say how many years it's been. I ain't going to say how many years it's been. It's been a while.
Been a long time.
Oh, boy. But yeah, and the pictures, Nathan took a lot of pictures, too. It all looked really fun.
Yeah, I still need to get together all the pictures he did at Durham Comic Con and make a gallery of that. And then I'm going to get the pictures that he took at the Renaissance Festival and put that up. It'll happen eventually. I'm still working on the Dragonfall Drawing Challenge, though. That kind of eating up all of my time.
I was just going to bring that one up. I mean, it's just, I love doing this because I feel like I improve in little incremental ways every time I do this, but my God, after 30 days of it, I'm like, that's it, not drawing for a while.
I'm going to have to try to make myself continue afterwards, because sometimes it does feel like I wait for the entire year so I can save up all my drawing time just for this month.
Gracious. But it's very, very fun, and Wade and Leland are still participating, so anybody can jump in. Well, Wade was asking me, he's like, oh, I've been really busy, I may have to skip some, and I'm like, there are no rules for this.
No, absolutely not. Do one, do many, do multiple ones in one day. That would be great.
Yes,
but, you know,
totally
don't
fine.
Feel like anyone's going to come after you and say that you're doing it wrong.
Nope, we ain't like that. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. I did actually put up a review of the first four issues of Nice House by the Sea. And it's really that... The apocalypse is just kind of like a background thing to that story. It's really just, I don't know, the relationships between people, but it does get into flat out horror every once in a while. I mean, there's some body horror that goes on in one of the issues that I was like, whoa, was not expecting them to go there. Holy cow.
Well, let me tell you, you got me the first graphic novel for the Nice House by the Lake, or the Nice House on the Lake, for Christmas last year. Yeah. I was going to put that on my Christmas wish list this year.
Nice.
They won't have one until like February, I don't think.
Oh, crap.
Yeah.
Well, shoot. Oh, no.
Sorry.
That's fine. That's fun. Really worth a look, though. It's very fun.
Oh, yeah, it really is.
But some people, I don't know, James Tynion IV, is that what his name is?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, Michael read an article by someone who had a problem with his storytelling style, and he compared him to Stephen King, but it wasn't meant as a compliment.
That's interesting, because Stephen King.
Me too. Maybe that's why I'm enjoying the books, but I'll see if I can find that article, and if so, I'll put a link in the description. All that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So, we won't have Night Vale next week, but we will certainly watch another episode of Arcane.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Aligning that up as we speak.
Yeah. And I'm working my way through the final season of Star Trek Lower Decks. And you're on what? The second season?
Second season. Again, with the Dragonfall Drawing Challenge, I have not had a chance to really sit down and watch any more episodes, but I'm like two episodes into the second season. So I'll probably binge them as soon as I don't have drawing to do every night.
No, seriously. Also, Wade told me that he's started watching BoJack Horseman again. So now that I've re-upped my Netflix membership, I'm like, it may be time for a rewatch.
I know all of that's going to be so different starting it from the beginning after seeing how it wrapped up. And I wish more shows were like that, where they have a beginning, middle, and a planned ending.
Yeah, and such a good ending too. Wow. So anyway, one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.